This podcast is scheduled for one fall. Now residing in the Quad Cities, Dave in the QC. And his tag team partner from Rochester, New York, this is RJ. Today's episode is brought to you by Fulton, a modern brand of arch support. Fulton launched the most comfortable, supportive, and sustainable insole on the planet. Fulton insoles have a deep heel cut and comfortable arch support that aligns your body from head to toe. They are made with using sustainable materials like vegan cactus leather and cork, allowing them to mold to the shape of your arch and provide customized support. They are also shock-absorbing, reducing impact on the body, and are lined with natural foam to make them extra comfortable. My back absolutely kills me, but with these insoles, my back does not kill me at the end of a long day of work. Fulton is offering our listeners $10 off your next purchase at walkfulton.com by using the code POD10. That's POD10 for $10 off at walkfulton.com. That's WALKFULTON.com. Check out their website to see how Fulton can support you. It is Friday. It is 9 a.m. You know what that means. Another great episode of the Ringside Rant is with you right here. Man with the magical voice, RJ, right here with you. He is the future coach of the year for the 9 and under softball team for his daughter. He is Dave in the QC. Dave, what's up, man?
Coach of the year, not hardly. I already said shit during the practice yesterday, so... Had all the kids going, ooh.
You're gonna be you're gonna be like Buttermaker from the Bad News Bears or something.
Yeah, the girls already don't like Coach Dave because I make them run. They don't like if they're not talking to each other out in the field.
Yeah.
Cause you know, at the end of practice for the last, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes or so, I start hitting grounders to the girls and making them throw. I tell them which base to throw it to, throw it to first, throw it to second, whatever the case may be. They're not, if they're not talking to each other or they're just standing around lollygagging, I call stop, everybody come to home plate and let's run.
Lap it out. Lap
they
it
don't
out,
like
man.
It. They don't like it.
Now see, we used to do when I was playing ball. He's like running's it's too easy. Too easy. You got to do pushups. He'd make us run to each base, do 10 pushups, run second base, 10 pushups, run to third base, 10 pushups. And then baked back to home and it's like, oh my God. And you can't throw the damn ball or something. It's like, well, shouldn't have fucked up. You know,
I remember football. We used to have to do suicides every 5 yards, the whole field. When our coach got pissed, and that's Florida heat in August.
Oof. I thought that was bad. When I played lacrosse in college, we did that the whole length of the field and back like twice. It's like, oh.
One time I remember the offensive coordinator, he got so pissed at us for something. I don't remember what it was. And he made us bear crawl 100 yards there and back. Dude, I literally thought my calves were going to die.
Did you ever do the Oklahoma drill?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, we did those too. And
I don't even think they can. I don't even think they really do that anymore.
They don't really do a lot of those old school drills anymore. They just kind of. Got to go by the letter of the law or letter of the school district or whatever, I guess. But
we also didn't get water breaks either.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You had to do something good to get a water break in practice.
Now it's like mandated every like half hour or something, I think. At least up here it is. I'm sure it's different down there.
Yeah, they had the old PVC pipe. Taped to the fence with holes drilled in it, you know, so the hose hooked up to it and
yeah,
would squirt water out. You're lucky if you got, a couple ounces of water while you're trying to get in there.
And it tasted like metal, and you thought you got like metal poisoning or something.
No, man, it was the best tasting thing ever. Just insane how hot it is in Florida in August. Like, people don't understand.
I can't imagine. I was down there, my my wife's family used to have a family house down on Anamia Island. Like I mentioned before, down on the Gulf side of Florida. And the only time we could ever go down was in August over the summer, just with stuff going on with the kid, or just that's the only time we could get. And holy Christ, I found out the hard way that you got to prepare yourself for Florida summers, because I got so badly sunburned, I actually started swelling. Like my legs ballooned out. I had no ankles. My leg was straight. And I'm like, I'm sitting there. And this is when I was drinking heavily too. I'm like, I couldn't feel anything. I was poking it. I'm like, man, this feels weird. But that's beside the point. But this week I thought we'd take a little bit of a turn from what we normally do about a certain pay-per-view, a certain match. We're going to concentrate on Chris Jericho this week, Dave. May 19th, 2002, Chris Jericho faced Triple H in Hell in the Cell. And this was one of my favorite matches to go back on. It's not almost, let's say, what was it, about 19 years later after the fact. And this match, it's so interesting to see. Jericho's still going, man, and he's still going hard. It's not like he's going back and forth and taking time off. He's going full go, and it just I don't know. I know we both watched this match before, but what are your thoughts on this match?
I like it. I mean, I thought it was a really good match. Jericho put on a hell of a show, as did Triple H, and. You know, the thing that I really, really liked, and that was different, was the guys at the end of the match, you know, before it's over, Jericho climbs up the cage. Triple H then proceeds to grab the barbed wire wrapped bat and go up the cage after him.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho ended up getting the bat, hit Triple H, you know, whatever the case may be. But the next thing you know, Kyoto's going up the cage after him.
Yeah.
And then the match ultimately ends on top of the cage.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something different. I liked that. It was innovative. And I liked that cage. Even that cage was higher. Like, you go back and watch the first couple Hell in a Cells. It was a much smaller height-wise cage. So mm-hmm. The one that Michaels originally fell off was he was dangling on, and the one Undertaker threw Mankind off were not near as high as this one. And This one's not near as high as the one they use now.
Yeah, the one they use now is so – I'm not a big – I see the point of it, but they just do it so goddamn much. Hell in a Cell matches between –
Well, yeah, because they have a pay-per-view of it. That's stupid.
It's the same, and we've had the discussion too. I feel the same way about the stupid Money in the Bank. That's a stupid pay-per-view now. It loses its luster when you have matches like that. And I believe the one that Michaels fell off the side, I believe there was something similar to what they what you use for a War Games match. Well, the original War Games match, I should say, the one that Dusty came up with the roof on top, where you could actually reach up top and touch the top of
higher,
the cage.
It was higher than that.
You think it was higher than that?
It was higher than that. But, yeah. I mean, I remember those early War Games, you know, they're doing suplexes or power bombs, and guys are getting, you know, they're hitting their head and stuff on top of the cage. That wasn't the case in those early Hell in a Cells, but they still weren't as tall as this one, you know, from 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nowhere near as tall as what they do now. Like, I can't believe, like, it really shocks me that Vince has those cages that tall and lets people jump off them.
Yeah. Well, when it's his own son, it's like, okay, we'll do it. We'll see what happens.
I mean, but plenty of guys jump off them, not just Shane.
Yeah. It was just the psychology in this match was unlike any other Hell in the Cell match, because we saw, I believe it was 99 Royal Rumble that he faced Cactus Jack.
That was 2000. Was it he faced Cactus Jack in the Hell in a Cell at No Way Out 2000.
I'm thinking the street fight at Royal Rumble. That's my right. Man. But every Hell in a Cell from basically 2002 and before, to me anyways, was a little bit different from any other one. Nowadays, it's the same cookie cutter BS that you see all the time. You're going to go off this, you're going to go off that. The only one that was different was the tag team one that they did. Well, I want to say maybe a couple of years ago with the Usos and the New Day. That was different.
I don't even remember that one.
That was different. That was where that was one of the first ones when they introduced the red cell. But this was two of the best guys in the business at this time and of all time, we could say as well. And
easily, both guys are top 10 in my books.
And they're going to be Hall of Famers. Yeah, they're going to be Hall of Famers.
I don't care what anybody says. But yeah, it was good. It's definitely one of the better Hell in a Cell matches. I don't think it was the greatest Hell in a Cell match ever. Mm-hmm. I give that to Mankind Undertaker just for the sheer craziness of the whole thing.
Right.
But this one was pretty damn good.
But even as
Jericho, I think Jericho and Triple H, you know, could work these kind of things. They did a great job in these kind of matches, especially back in this era. You know, this is 19 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were in their, you know, definitely in their prime. So it was a great run they both had in the company, you know, leading up to this match, because they were feuding. Obviously Triple H was actually the face here and Jericho was the heel. But that's what I think made Jericho so great, is I loved him and thought he was a top face or heel, no matter what he was playing.
Right.
He was great. Whether he's face or heel, has always been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Triple H loses me. I don't really see, other than DX, and that's, I'm talking to the 1998 version DX.
Right.
That's the only time I've really cared about a face Triple H. Other than that, I think Triple H has always been an awesome heel.
Right. I put him along the same lines, Triple H, that is, put him along the same lines as a Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, that they've tried to do the whole face thing, but at the end of the day, their best work is a heel.
I wouldn't put Piper in that. I'd put Orton. Like, I think Randy Orton's one of those. Ric Flair, definitely, and yeah. Triple H. They're most definitely, they're ones that play the heel much better than they play the face.
Yeah, and it's in, especially this time, there wasn't, this was probably the last good era that you knew who was a heel, who was a face. You can't say that nowadays, especially in the WWE, the main roster there. You don't really, you have a good idea. There's a couple here and there, but for the most part, it's like everybody's changing so often that it's hard to keep track of. But with that being said, let's send it up to the ring with Mr. Rich Palladino.
Ringside Rant fans, it's the opening contest.
All right, Rich, thanks for that. So, Dave, we briefly touched on this before we got here to the opening contest, but I think this was one of my favorite Hell in the Cell matches of all time. Obviously, we mentioned the Mankind and Undertaker match. Obviously, it was innovated at that time, but I just, as far as a on the whole, I think this was pretty far up there as far as the quality of the match. I know, obviously, you feel otherwise, but what other ones outside of that Mankind and Undertaker match really can hold light to this?
I like the Undertaker Shawn Michaels one.
The first one?
The original.
Yeah.
And I like Undertaker and Triple H at WrestleMania 29, something like that.
Was that the one with Shawn
Michaels
referee?
As the ref?
Yeah.
I thought that was a good one. I'm trying to think back. I remember at the time when I watched it, I really liked Triple H and Batista when they did Hell in a Cell.
When was... I'm trying
that'd
to remember.
That'd be in 2000.
When...
That'd be at at 2005.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say that was earlier. That was...
So that one wasn't bad. But other than that, a lot of... I'm kind of drawing a blank on other matches after that. So none of the other ones really... None of the new ones really stick with me that much. I think the last one that I saw that I really loved was Undertaker Triple H.
Yeah, because I think him and Undertaker and Edge had one too that was pretty good. But like we said, it's when you have the gimmick pay-per-views like a Hell in the Cell, like Money in the Bank, so on and so forth, it's so hard to make these pay-per-views, these matches, excuse me, feel special. And that's why we've had this discussion before many times that they have to do away with these gimmick pay-per-views, because before when they said Hell in a Cell, you were like, oh crap, that shit's about to happen. Now it's like, eh, well, we'll see in a couple months anyways at the pay-per-view. We'll see about three or four of them. So what the hell's the difference?
Yeah, and that's what I feel about with Hell in a Cell, but also have the same feeling with the Elimination Chamber. I don't particularly care to see the Elimination Chamber every year either.
Right.
I think if there's something going on and there's legit beef with six guys or whatever the case may be, six girls, whatever, then you have an Elimination Chamber match. Just like Hell in a Cell. See, I don't really think there should be much Hell in a Cell at all, because it's really supposed to be kind of something that ends a feud. And these days, everything's put together so fast and everybody wrestles so often and on Raw and this, that, and the other. How do you ever really have a feud end? Because people can't wait that long to get the resolution that they want. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The only gimmick match I think that should be a regular pay-per-view is the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I wouldn't mind seeing Money at the Bank. I mean, I guess I could do a Money in the Bank pay-per-view, but you could just have the match at WrestleMania or whatever. That way they could get those extra women or men in instead of having battle royals like we've talked about in an earlier episode.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just kind of old. I think the Money in the Bank concept's kind of old too. When you see something happen every year, you know, like, oh, well, if a heel wins it, they're going to wait to cash in at a certain time. It was awesome when RVD won it and said, okay, at Extreme Rules, I'm challenging John Cena. And that place was lit for that match.
Yeah, because that was at One Night. Was that One Night Stand?
Yeah, or it was at the second one. It was the second One Night Stand.
And that atmosphere in general, because I believe that was at the still in New York City there. And,
yeah, and they, you know, they had the sign of Cena wins, we riot.
Yeah, and they look. But that's where you tell that story with a lot of these matches. It's like, there's no damn story to it.
Nah, it's almost like WWE doesn't care. Vince is stuck in his ways. And at least with NXT, you get War Games,
mm-hmm.
But War Games means something. There's a reason to have it. They have factions or whatever in NXT,
mm-hmm.
where you can have War Games. So there's reasons why you have two different teams matching up. Like last year, you had Pat McAfee's group going up against the Undisputed Era. It made sense. They were feuding. End it in War Games. So that I understand. But, you know, it is what it is. Even though, like, I think War Games now could probably be done away with and just do it Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you can't have 4-on-4 in Hell in a Cell.
Well, especially the size that they have now, like we said, because it's so much bigger now, why can't
Well, not only that, but I mean, you have the whole area around the ring.
Yeah.
And WWE has a bigger ring than WCW used to have.
Yeah.
So you don't really need two rings there.
Because theirs is a 20 by 20. And I think, I don't think AEW was that size. I think AEW might be a little bit smaller. I think they adopted the WCW size, I believe.
I don't think so. I think they're bigger. They might not be 20 by 20, but their WCW's ring was small.
Because that might have been like 16 or 15.
I don't know what it was, but it was smaller. It was definitely a lot smaller.
But And it's even we'll go to AEW then. We haven't really seen, for everybody that's saying, oh, it's a gimmick match, it's a gimmick match. We haven't really seen, we've seen what, one cage match?
So it says AEW and WWE both use 20-foot ring.
Do they 20? Okay. But they've only had that one cage match, but I believe, I may be wrong, with Wardlow and with Cody when he moonsaulted off the top. I believe that was Dallas.
That was in Atlanta.
Was it Atlanta? Okay, I thought it was Dallas for some reason. Anyways, but even that, they're not trying to be as gimmicky, even though people argue that they have been. They're not trying to be as gimmicky as they, as WWE, because they have these certain.
Well,
papers.
They'll have their version of War Games next week on Dynamite, Blood and Guts or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, no, that's, it's next. Yeah, it's next week. It's the 5th.
Next Wednesday.
Yeah. But it's, I think everybody at this point, though, is just for pop ratings, to pop merchandise sales, because that's, everybody wants the ones that Hell in the Cell thing for their, you know, their rings or whatever that they have for their figures or whatnot. It's like, oh, well, it's, you got to sell this, you got to sell that. Because
when you have cage matches all the time, it brings it down.
Yeah.
It used to be very rare you saw a cage match, and when you saw one, it meant something. It was just stupid in WWE or WWF because the rule was escape the cage to win. Well, that's kind of like cowardly, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you just have somebody get pinned?
Pin or submission, yeah.
But whatever. That's the one thing where I thought like NWA or WCW definitely had the leg up on WWF with that rule. But I don't know. It's funny because Vince has this thing about his top guy ever really getting pinned. You know, Hogan's first like clean pinfall was to the Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And technically, at WrestleMania 6. And technically, Hogan had Warrior pinned earlier in the match when there was no ref.
Right.
But he lost the title first time to Andre the Giant with the whole crooked ref deal.
Mm-hmm. And then he put it in the tournament. That was WrestleMania 4.
But so, you know, Hogan just never really lost clean, ever. Yeah. I mean, even Yokozuna beat him because Jim Cornette shot fire in his eye.
Yeah, Mr.
You know, Undertaker beat him because he tombstoned him on a chair.
Right. Was it Tuesday, Texas?
So there's always something different.
Mm-hmm.
Cena, look how many times Super Cena was there and went over. Look at Roman Reigns now. Never losing.
But the
it's one of those things that it gets ridiculous because he has his three top guys that he has his one top guy that never gets beat unless something funky happens. But everybody else on the roster, it's all 50-50 booking. So nobody else matters worth a shit.
Right. But would you, at this time, we'll say 2002 and on, because Jericho debuted 2 years before this. Do you see Jericho, obviously not trying to keep it as current as possible, but did you see Jericho as a top guy at this time in 2002 and a little bit, a couple of years after this?
I did, but I'm a little biased because Jericho has always been one of my absolute favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jericho went to WWF, I didn't think he would amount to what we got with Jericho. I thought he would be intercontinental European type guy, but Vince legit made him a bona fide main eventer and a believable main eventer. So he never held a world title for a long run in WWE, although he held multiple. I mean, he's held 36 titles in his career, right, including he's a 10-time intercontinental champion between WWE and New Japan. He won multiple world titles.
Tag titles.
And then, you know, he won the European title? Yeah, he won the European title. He's had the WCW television, WCW Cruiserweight. So he's had all these titles, but I never thought he would be, when he first came in, I never thought he would be a world champion. But I also never expected it to be 2021 and we still talk about Chris Jericho in wrestling, because that's unheard of.
Oh yeah. And it's great to see, because I think we've seen, especially with him in AEW now, is when the time does come that he says, okay, I just can't do it anymore in the ring. My body's breaking down, this or that, or what have you. He's done this commentary with Tony and JR and Excalibur. He's got that made in the shade too, because he's such so good on the mic that he can just hop into that like nothing. There's no transition.
He's definitely, and I think that's what made Chris Jericho so successful in WWE.
Yeah.
Is that he could talk. I think if Jericho didn't have the gift of gab like he has, I don't think he ever would have made it. So, and that's strictly not because I don't think he's worth the shit or anything, but you got to understand, in Vince's head, everything's Land of the Giants.
Right.
And Chris Jericho, if you really look at him, he's not that small. I mean, you watch the match that you and I are talking about here with Triple H. He's not that much smaller than Triple H.
And Triple H is 6'2", 6'3". What,
but he is smaller. So, I mean, he's on the same level as a Shawn Michaels, and everybody knows Shawn Michaels is a legit main eventer. So why isn't Chris, why couldn't Chris Jericho be? And I think he is. So, but now, after getting over the hump of beating Austin and beating Rock in the same night to win the undisputed title, I think people legit saw Chris Jericho as a main eventer.
Right. Now, did you like Jericho's, the WCW Jericho? Did you like the modern day Jericho that we're seeing now? Wait, modern day as far as encapsulating current AEW, New Japan stuff. Or did you like the list in the WWE kind of Jericho? What was your favorite Jericho?
I've liked all of them.
Yeah.
My favorite Jericho, obviously, is Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla.
Right when he came in. Yeah.
Right. So his run from 99 up through 2005, his initial WWF run, WWE, whatever, that was really my favorite Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, because he's taken a couple of hiatuses, come back. So when he's come back, he's always changed a little bit. But I really liked Chris Jericho as a heel in WCW. The Monday Night Jericho and Ralphus, stuff right. like that. His run in WCW, when he first came in as Lionheart Chris Jericho as the babyface, it was kind of just another babyface that's there. He was really impressive in the ring, but until he started with the Man of 1,004 holds and reading the list.
Right, right.
Stuff like that. That's what really made Jericho awesome. And I became a huge fan of Jericho once he became a heel in WCW.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to go to the way he was booked there. At that time, you were talking about with like Dean Malenko, with Eddie, with Ray, that whole cruiserweight division, because as we talked with Eric before about it, Bischoff, that is, that was unlike any other division in all of professional wrestling at that time. So
I think Jericho was when a couple of weeks ago, when I talked about why I don't think WCW titles meant anything, I said there were three wrestlers that held that belt for over 100 days. One of those was Jericho.
Right.
And he really gave that belt storyline and substance. And that's what really impressed me about Jericho. And to be honest, I think somebody, say Chris Jericho's in the WWE now, starting out. So, we're fast forward, it's 2021. And we now have the Chris Jericho from 1999 in WWE. I don't think he'd be near as successful, because he wouldn't have the freedom to talk. He'd be running these stupid bullshit promos that he's given from Hollywood writers and Vince McMahon or whatever. And he wouldn't be able to truly be himself like so many of these guys are, or so many of these guys aren't, like they were back in the day, but they aren't now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the real problems. I don't have a problem with maybe a little bit of tweaking here and there on promos, because some of the promos I see on AEW, I think are god awful because these guys are going out there and they just kind of say, oh, bitch, shit, just because they can.
Right.
But there's no substance behind what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I think Jericho is one of those that he can go out there with a live mic and spit it right there from the heart. Just go.
Right.
And he can get his message across to the fans in something that's believable and that they want to hear. And I think that it would get watered down if he were in WWE today as a young up and coming superstar. Just think about his line with The Rock back in 2001. It was a SmackDown, Jericho and Rock, and Stephanie McMahon's in the ring with Rhino and Booker T. And, you know, you have Jericho saying, we've got the gore and the whore. And, you know, they do the Booker T does, or Rock says, okay, little Booker, what's 2 + 2? Thomas Jefferson, sucker. You have stuff like that.
Right.
Where's that shit now? That's because these guys could talk. They could do that kind of stuff. Could you imagine The Rock now without being able to go out and talk on his own and being given these promos? Roman Reigns at one time was booed out of the building as a face. Fans didn't give a shit about him. They then ran one of those things where Triple H was the authority. He screwed Roman Reigns out of a title. And Roman Reigns straight destroyed him. And fans got super excited about Roman Reigns because he became a badass and destroyed him. Within 2 weeks, they were back to not giving a shit again because they have him running those stupid promos again. Anybody that ever thinks saying suffering succotash in a promo for pro wrestling's good needs to get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Anybody that thinks naming a pay-per-view Great Balls of Fire, it's time to get the fuck out. And that's the problem with wrestling these days.
Right.
Well, that's the problem with WWE anyway.
Well, yeah, but I think there's
Vince is not connecting with the fans anymore.
Well, and I think we're starting to see that whatever promotion you go to, there's always going to be something that you may not like. I may not like, so-and-so may not like. There's always going to be something. But as a whole, that's what the problem with WWE is currently. But at this time, Jericho, there hasn't really been documented, as far as I saw, a lot of those major injuries that he had. So with the lack of the injuries, and what do you think that kept Jericho afloat all these years? This is 2002. We're talking 2021.
I think a lot of it helps with, you know, once it hit 2005, he took a couple years off.
Yeah.
Stayed for a couple years, took another 2.5-3 years off. I think that helps. Him not always being there. You know, I really think that we might see some of that now. If wrestling's moving more towards live television shows and doing away with a lot of the travel and the house shows and the wear and tear these guys put on their body, I think you might see some prolonged careers. Now, I know I've heard Jim Ross say that he thinks that wrestlers really hone their craft at the house shows. And that's how they really get good. And doing away with that would be bad. But I mean, if it's not making money, you can't see how these guys get anywhere with it. So,
well, and I think that's what the PC is there for too, to hone your craft, because obviously they're not running every day there. They still can go down there, and majority of these guys and gals currently, majority of them live in the South, live in the Southern states, close enough to Florida where they could take a drive, take a flight down, stay for a couple days.
Oh, so many of them live in the Tampa area. It's nuts. And they always have.
And it's just enough can go over to Orlando or Tampa or whatever.
Chris Jericho lives in Tampa.
Yeah. And there's enough schools around now. Especially, like I said, in the South, in the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, whatever. There's enough around that you can go down, hone your craft there, and you don't have to worry about the travel, like you said, to the house shows. But the way that He's been so successful time after time, year after year. Do you think it's more of, hey, he's just such a great mind for the business? Or do you think it's, whether it be Vince McMahon or Tony Khan or Eric Bischoff or whomever he worked for? Or do you think it's just a combination of everything, that all the stars align the right way? Jericho is that damn good, And he hit the business at the right time.
I think he's just that damn good. And I think it really helps too that he's been able to morph into something different. That's kind of what made The Undertaker so great, is he wasn't the same character in 2020 as he was in 1990. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem that we've had with Hulk Hogan, is that the Hulk Hogan that still comes out in 2021 at WrestleMania is the same Hulk Hogan from 1985, with the prayers and vitamins and this, that, and the other. I think that's one of the things that fans really kind of, that's why they bored of Cena so fast.
Right.
Cena was over like Rover when he was that white rapper.
Right.
And he would come out and cut promos and throw nuts, get off my nuts and stuff in people's face. People like that. But and then he made that movie, The Marine. Then he came out with the whole Marine shit, and he's done it ever since, where he comes out and salutes, and he's real kid-like and geared towards children like Hulk Hogan was. And then you have The Undertaker. Undertaker comes for a couple years. He wears his gray gloves, stuff like that. Loses to Yokozuna in a casket match. Comes back 6 months later, 7 months later. And he's a little bit different. He's got purple. He's got longer hair. It's a little bit different. A couple years after that, he loses to Mankind at the Boiler Room Brawl. He's gone for a couple months, comes back. He's a little bit different. You know, he now doesn't wear gloves. He's changed his style some. He turns into Evil Undertaker, changes up his look some more. He now is more demonic. He's got the long devil looking beard. He's changed his outfit again as the Ministry of Darkness. He's different. He loses to Steve Austin in the Buried Alive match. Comes back as the American Badass. Has a couple different, you know, runs that way. He turns bad again. He's now Big Evil. And he ends up losing something to Brock Lesnar, comes back again. He's the Dead Man again, but a different kind. Mm-hmm. So he's always been evolving. And I think Chris Jericho has as well. And I think it's important that these guys not only evolve with their look, but with their attitude and stuff like that. The Jericho that we got when AEW first started was his little gimmick type that he was running in Japan. Right. He had a little bit of face paint on with the eye black and the, but he morphed into the rocker singing Judas with the Inner Circle. And he's forever morphing. So you had dull white meat babyface Lionheart Chris Jericho in WCW. Then you had the heel Jericho, Monday Night Jericho in WCW. Then you had the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla come to WWF. And then he's morphed over the years. He's cut the hair a little bit. The last time we saw him in WWF, he had the list,
mm-hmm,
or the scarf. So he's forever been evolving and entertaining the fans. And it's not just the same dull thing over and over and over and over again.
And I think the reason why he's stayed around so long and been active for so long is he's learned, he's seen what other people have done, good, bad, and different. And he's tried to make everything his own. He's reinventing. He's cut his hair. He went from trunks to tights. He went from just a different style in the ring because he knew, hey, my body, I can't do this anymore. I can't do that anymore. Let me come up with a list. Let me come up with being the pain maker over in Japan and still getting over. You know, he's still not
mad at my wife. She left my pain maker shirt in Vegas.
but you know, he's not going to be doing these moonsaults, these lion salts as much anymore. So he's got to come up with different plays in the playbook. He's got to come up with different move sets. He's got to come up with better promos, believe it or not, from what he's from what he's done in the past, if that's even possible. But and I think that's what will set Jericho above all the rest of the current crop of guys of his era of that style, is he was just that much better because of his microphone skills. Because if you knew that you had to put up or shut up, because if you had their in-ring talent and he didn't have certain things, he could still beat you with the microphone and bury you, but he could, you know, dismiss you even quicker with that. But and I think that's why he went with the AEW, because he's noticed that a lot of these younger talents will need to learn that if they want to be where he is right now. At, I think he's what, 51, I believe, or 50.
He's 50.
Yeah. So
I think it's a miracle that he's with AEW.
I go
back and hear that he had asked Vince about it, and Vince said, "Well, I can't pay that much money. Go sign with him." And then he did. And a couple of days later, Vince is like, "Never mind. Don't sign that. I'll give you blah, blah, blah." But by then Jericho had already signed.
Well, and we saw the whole thing with Austin too, with Jericho being on the network before the Peacock or whatever, on his Broken Skull Challenge. And I think with him going to AEW, it was the best thing, but we're going to touch on that in our next segment. So let's head up to the ring with Mr. Rich Palladino, and we'll be right back.
Ringside Rant fans, it is now time for Rants and Raves.
So Dave, we touched on it briefly in our last segment before we took the break there, but I think Jericho going to AEW when they first became relevant in the wrestling business, I think it was best for the wrestling business as a whole, because you had a lot more fans coming out of the woodworks going over to AEW to see what they were going to do starting off, and thus brought a lot of WWE fans. Yes, I said WWE fans. I know there's a few of them out there still, but drew them out to see what WWE was going to do in retaliation to what they were doing, whether it be the main roster, Raw, SmackDown, or even NXT. And I think for years to come, we're only going to see the business get better. And I think right now it's currently the best time to be in the business, whether it be a worker, or whether it be a front office, or be a promoter, or broadcaster, whatever. It's great to be in the business today, I think, because of what he's done.
Well, there's a lot of wrestling available now that we haven't always had. But to a point, which I think is why WWE is so bad, is that there's too much. Monday Night Raw is too long. If it would go back to 2 hours, it would be just a complete holy shit, thank you. I think the reason why SmackDown seems to be favored much more, because it is 2 hours. I don't want to watch 3 hours of cable television wrestling every Monday night. With that being said, you have Raw available on television. You now have NXT on television. You now have AEW on television. You have TNA or Impact on television. You have SmackDown on television. You have NWA on Fight. You have ROH on different cable providers you can watch. So there's tons of options out there for fans now. There's tons of places for wrestlers to go. That's why I don't really think it's that big of a deal when April 15th, every year WWE releases a large number of the roster. They've been doing it for a while. And every year people are up in arms about, oh my God, they let all these people go without getting any kind of backstory or anything like that, knowing that the vast majority of these guys are going to be picked up as soon as their 90-day no compete, in which they're still getting paid, is over.
Yeah, that's what
if
a lot
Kurt
of people...
Hawkins and Zack Ryder get picked up just like that. What makes you think the Mickey Jameses aren't, the Samoa Joes aren't? They'll be just fine. And that's no knock on Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder or anything like that. But they're not as big a names as Mickey James and Samoa Joe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's rumblings that Bo Dallas, he was released. But there's rumblings that he's been dabbling in real estate and he's kind of done with wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, why would WWE keep all these people that they're not using? Doesn't make sense. At this point, they don't give a shit.
Yeah.
They're not using them. Why keep paying them? If they want to go to, what are they going to do when they go to AEW or this, that, and the other? Chris Jericho's made it. Miro hasn't done anything impressive over there. FTR has.
Right.
I would have liked to have seen the revival, you know, if WWE actually used their tag team wrestling. But Vince obviously doesn't give a shit about tag team wrestling, so why keep them? But who else? Nobody else is. I mean, nobody's gone over there and really done anything. They let Sting go. He signed with them. He's had his one little match thing, whatever, but he's not. It's okay. So I think, you know, out of fear that first year, Vince tried to sign everybody to bigger contracts and this, that, and the other, but eventually just said, fuck it, let him go.
Yeah.
Because he sees it's not going to kill him. You know, on our first episode we ever did here, and this now being my last episode with Ringside Rant, I said that by the end of the year, I thought Dynamite would be pulling in 1 million viewers each week.
Yeah, and it did it.
So they're now doing it now that NXT is gone. So They've done it the last 2 weeks. They'll do it for sure next week.
Oh, with the blood and guts.
Yeah. You know, I'll give them the first week they had Mike Tyson. It's a little bit different. But they're putting on a better show. Mm-hmm. It's still not perfect. There's still a lot of funky stuff going on and things that just don't look right. But they're still an infant company and it'll get there. I don't view AEW as WCW equivalent day.
No, not by a long shot.
But at least it's tolerable to watch.
Well, it's wrestling, man, and that's
so. But I never watch Impact. I never watch ROH. Hell, I never watch Raw. But
you're not the
only. I love NXT. Yeah. I watch and I'm watching AEW more now because it's not on the same night as NXT.
Right.
So and, because NXT is my favorite.
And I just find it interesting too when NXT made the move to Tuesday nights. I was like, oh, they got scared. AEW won. I'm like, no, they didn't. They want to actually move to a different night because they had, I think it was the hockey playoffs or something with sports on USA was going to be coming out and was going to be going to Wednesday
nights. You have people that just hate WWE just to hate them.
Right.
Oh, they're putting NXT on Wednesday nights to go up against Dynamite. NXT was always on Wednesday nights. The fuck are y'all talking about?
Even when it was on the network.
That's what I'm saying. It was always on Wednesday nights.
Yeah.
So I think it makes more sense for them to move NXT off the same night as AEW.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I think Bischoff and Bruce Pritchard are right when they say that they don't truly believe the wrestling numbers from the 90s were really that high. Both of them are drawing 4 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I did, so many of us switched back and forth all night long. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
I did it, yeah.
Okay, what's going on here? Oh, it's commercial. Go to Raw. Oh, it's commercial. Go to Nitro. Oh, it's, you know, Bobby Eaton is fighting Fit Finley. Go back to Raw. See what's going on.
Right.
Oh, it's Val Venus and Kai and Tai. Okay, let's go back to Nitro. So it just depends.
Yeah.
So certain segments, certain things. But people get too wrapped up in winning and losing something when in reality we're all winning and we're all enjoying what we have.
Mm-hmm.
So is everybody making money? Yeah. All right, then. Who gives a shit?
Everybody's enjoying their respective wrestling that they're watching. Like you said, whether it's AEW, WWE, Impact, ROH, NWA.
Except for Raw, that shit's terrible.
Oh, God, I can't. I've been off all week, and I didn't even watch Raw. I didn't want to put myself through it.
I watched about an hour and a half the night after WrestleMania, because it's the Raw after WrestleMania.
And you think something's going to happen.
And it was so god-awful. I'm like, well, done with this shit.
Yeah.
And it never even occurs to me on Monday nights anymore to turn the shit on. I just couldn't care less.
Yeah. You go back to this era where, like we were talking about, 2002 to pretty much, for me anyways.
Holy shit. From 1995.
To like, I'd say at least 2004.
Until, I mean, past that.
You think so?
Up until about 2010.
Yeah.
I could name on two hands how many times I missed Monday Night Raw.
Well, that's when they had that talent because other than
the times where I was like deployed when I was in the army, so that doesn't really count. Right. But I watched it. I was a huge fan. I didn't always watch SmackDown. Now, when it came on Thursdays or whatever, I did. But once it came, once SmackDown moved to Fridays, because it's been on Fridays numerous times,
mm-hmm. Right?
I didn't watch it as much, but that's because I was out at bars. I was out doing this, that, and the other. So I wasn't at home watching SmackDown. Mm-hmm. But I always kept up with the results. So, and I already knew what was going to happen on SmackDown before it happened anyway, because it didn't used to be live. So I just read the results every Wednesday anyway, because they used to record it on Tuesdays.
Right.
So I would read the results and then go on about my business. I didn't have to watch it. I already knew what happened. But I loved, you know, I always loved wrestling, but I mean, really, once I became a teenager and started staying up later and watching Raw and Nitro and things of that nature, I watched it every week. I watched Superstars. I watched all that mess. So right now, I can go and not watch anything but a pay-per-view and be completely satisfied.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are in that same boat, unfortunately, and I hate saying this, we've said it before, when Vince does pass and he's not longer in charge, I hope we're going to see, we'll see that transition, that change in the company. But time will tell with that. But with Jericho, we mentioned WCW, we've mentioned New Japan, WWE, ECW. We didn't really touch too much briefly on his ECW there, but where do you think, we said where he was our favorite, where do you think he did the best work?
WWE.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was in ECW for a hot minute. He was in Smoky Mountain Wrestling with Lance Storm. They were tag team partners. They were like the Natural Born Thrillers or something like that.
Heat Seekers.
Heat Seekers, yeah. Who were the Natural Born Thrillers? Oh, that was WCW.
That was
Jindrak and O'Hare or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the Heat Seekers with Lance Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a great run in WCW, but anybody not named Hogan or Savage or Goldberg or Sting or Luger was winning a world title in WCW. So the stuff that he really started putting forth with Dean Malenko was incredible. Mm-hmm. And that's when he really got running. But Jericho, when he came to WWF, I mean, he took off like a rocket.
Yeah.
Once he really got started, I mean, his first couple matches, he had some DQs and the screwy finish thing with China, which was stupid and all that. But then he really took off. So I want to say probably around WrestleMania 16, after he'd been in WWF for, you know, 9-10 months.
Yeah.
That's when he really got rolling.
Well, and I think when you automatically, when you come from WCW to the WWF at that time, and you get thrown into a promo on your first night in the business and into that company against The Rock, one of the best performers of all time, if not the best, putting a lot of bank on you, pal. And
well, Jericho could go with The Rock.
Word for, yeah, he could with the promo.
So you have Jericho, you have The Rock, you have a guy like LA Knight who can go on the mic, and that's why I see big things coming for him.
Yeah.
Because you really think about it, you know, they say one of the real good talkers was Road Dogg. Like, Road Dogg just kind of said the same shit every week. So it wasn't all that. Hulk Hogan, it was always the same promo. Let me tell you something, brother. In the Ultimate Warrior, it was always just craziness. But real talkers like The Rock and Chris Jericho could sit there and you'd be eating out of the palm of their hand. Kind of like what you have with Eddie Kingston now.
Right.
He can go. And I never knew who Eddie Kingston was until I started watching NWA when they came back last year or 2 years ago, pre-COVID. That's when I learned who Eddie Kingston was. I'm like, holy shit, this guy can really go on the mic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good to have.
If you want to see a lot of, I'm glad you brought up Eddie Kingston. If you want to see a lot of his good stuff, throw it in the YouTube, Google, whatever. Check out his stuff he did in Impact with LAX. And that stuff he had, that was legitimately some of the best stuff he's done. Even obviously the stuff he's doing now is great too, but just that stuff, it's like, holy crap, did he just say that?
But Ric Flair was a great interview. Dusty Rhodes was a great interview.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing holding Dusty back was his lisp, but people loved it. It was that made him.
Yeah. That was his thing. That made him different from everybody else.
So, but that's so far gone now because everything's so scripted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I think. Roman Reigns is better now than he ever has been because he's out there and he's not really talking. He's got Heyman and who looks deathly afraid of him. And it's great.
Yeah.
You know, Brock Lesnar didn't have to go out there and talk. Like, I don't understand why WWE refuses to push anybody that doesn't really talk other than Brock Lesnar. And now Roman Reigns, but Roman Reigns still is talking, but not like what he used to.
Right. But exactly.
That's what managers were for. Shit. Andre the Giant, you couldn't understand a word he said.
That's why he had Heenan, or he had Ted DiBiase, or he had somebody.
Exactly. That's why they make managers.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had the Wild Samoans. They had Captain Lou Albano. You don't always have to have somebody go out there and talk and talk and talk. Like I said, the Ultimate Warrior, he would do interviews, but I mean, who could understand what the hell he's talking about? But they pushed him to the moon. Fans loved him.
Right.
I never thought Bret Hart was that great of a talker. Right, so, yeah. Austin, I mean, he did great interviews. It's one of the things that helped the Stone Cold character. I don't know if he would have been as over as he was, or the whole thing would have worked as well as it did if he didn't break his neck.
Austin, that is.
Now, I think he still would have been world champion. And I mean, in that time, he was over like Rover too. But him breaking his neck and not wrestling for a few months and doing all that, and then the whole feud with McMahon, I mean, that really made fans really want Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And when they turned him heel in 2001, the fans didn't want him as a heel. But see, that's where they screwed up. Like, they don't want this guy as a heel, and you do it. And then they do want the guy, and you don't. Like, how many years, like, it could have saved Cena if they'd have turned him heel at some point. Good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Hogan. I mean, look what happened when Hogan finally turned heel.
It blew up the business.
But instead, we get Triple H, you know, face and heel turns all the time. Randy Orton, face and heel. Well, not Triple H, but like Randy Orton has had a bunch of face and heel turns.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it himself, he'd rather be a heel. Triple H has had numerous face and heel turns. He said it himself, he'd rather be a heel. And a lot of these guys, they play the heel better. But when you get the same guy that's always a face, it's always the same thing. It gets old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get that. But what's our last segment there for the last question for this segment?
Let's go with what you think Jericho's best rivalry in WCW and WWE is, and then I'll tell you what mine is.
WWE, I really think he did his best work, and this may get a lot of heat, what have you, but it's a close tie with Angle and Benoit. because they had those.
Not a chance. Not a chance.
You don't think
no
so?
No chance. No.
But I think they just had those classic brawls, those classic matches that for the IC title. Those the ladder match they had at Royal Rumble. They had that triple threat when Angle had when Angle was the Eurocontinental champion.
Mm-hmm.
And they taught a lot of people that you could be mid cards to start your career, but you still could gain the recognition, gain the popularity, gain the knowledge to become a main eventer. You could become a world champion. You just have to basically bust your ass, win these titles, these mid-card titles, the IC title, the US title, Euro, whatever. And you could still get up to that main event-esque matches. And I think they're really, to me anyways, especially in WWE, because he was there for so long, there's not too many bad rivalries that he had because he always got
there
it over.
There is one rivalry that you have to remember for Chris Jericho.
Okay.
HBK.
Oh, right there in, what was that? Like
so here we go.
2003, 2004?
We'll start. No. The big rivalry was in 2008. 2003. Royal Rumble. Leading up to the Royal Rumble, Shawn Michaels is going to be entrant number one. Chris Jericho wins a battle royal and gets to choose the number that he will come into the Royal Rumble. He chooses number two to go up against his childhood hero, Shawn Michaels. Time of the Royal Rumble. Shawn Michaels comes out to the ring. He's just sexy boy. Sexy boy. Okay. Now the Y2J hits. It's Christian dressed as Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho then comes out of the crowd and beats down Michaels and throws him out of the ring real quick. Starting the Jericho-Michaels feud. At WrestleMania 19, Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels wrestle a classic match. Michaels wins. They embrace after the match. Jericho then turns on Michaels again. They had sporadic matches here and there from there. Now, we're in 2008. Michaels and Jericho are now not really beefing, but you can see the seeds are being planted for a feud. They end up wrestling at Judgment Day 2008. Shawn Michaels wins again after rolling up Jericho when Jericho was attempting the Walls of Jericho. So they then tag after that. They're partners. In June, Chris Jericho turns on Michaels during an episode of the Highlight Reel. At the end of June, Night of Champions, Shawn Michaels interferes in Chris Jericho's match against Kofi Kingston, costs Chris Jericho the Intercontinental title. In July, Great American Bash, Chris Jericho defeats Shawn Michaels due to referee stoppage after continually to attack Shawn Michaels' eye that he injured at the highlight reel earlier, a couple months ago. In August, you have the infamous Chris Jericho throws a punch, Shawn Michaels ducks. Chris Jericho actually legit hits Shawn Michaels' wife, Rebecca, in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Now, he was supposed to kayfabe puncher, and I mean, he actually connected. That wasn't supposed to happen, but everything was okay. September, Unforgiven, unsanctioned match. Shawn Michaels defeats Chris Jericho via referee stoppage. Later on the night, Chris Jericho comes back out and wins the world title. October 2008, No Mercy. Chris Jericho defeats Shawn Michaels in a ladder match to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. The Wrestling Observer names that match Match of the Year. The Wrestling Observer and Pro Wrestling Illustrated Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, feud of the year. 2008, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho was insane. It was awesome. Michaels had come back from his hiatus, his 2 years off, and he and Shawn Michaels had a year of straight dominating everything with how great their segments and their matches were. Now, you want to talk about WCW? His greatest feud was with Dean Malenko over the cruiserweight title.
Oh, yeah. I think we can both agree to that. That's, yeah.
Yeah, right. But nothing will ever compare with Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels. And that's because they are two of the absolute very best to ever do it.
Yeah, I kind of had the inkling that you're going to go that way. So I'm like, I better not, because I'm sure he's probably got a lot to say. So I'm like, I'm going to back up a little bit. But I think because he did, like I said before, that he was, he's been in the company, he's been in the business for so long. There's not really been too many matches. And I'm sure he would say that, oh, there's probably been a few there, here and there, but that we've seen that we can say he's pretty damn good. Yeah. He's not.
I still say we see Jericho back in WWE at some point.
You think so?
Yep.
To end this, you think it's going to be like, hey, I want to retire as the company that put me on the map kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So I think for sure he goes into the WWE Hall of Fame. But I think at some point, unless Tony Khan somehow locks him up into some crazy long-term contract.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying Jericho will ever wrestle in WWE again.
But he's going to do something with the company.
But I think he returns back to the company.
I still say one or two things happens when he says, hey, we're going to hang him up for good. We're going to see him in some sort of facet, whether it be a producer, whether it be on screen as far as an announcer. Excuse me. But
I think you could see him do something like what Stone Cold does. You could see a Talk is Jericho thing on the network.
On the network, yeah. And that's probably what we'll see. Like you said, when and if he goes back, that's something that could be a possibility of him to get in the door.
I think Vince thinks he comes back too. I think Vince thinks he comes back too, because Vince obviously has a soft spot for Jericho.
Yeah.
And if he didn't, there's no way Jericho ever would have been allowed on Stone Cold's show on the network.
Oh, no. Not a chance. If it was anybody else,
Vince trusts Jericho. Jericho came to him and said, you know, I've been offered this, blah, blah, blah. But I think Vince trusts Jericho, and he knows that he could put Jericho on that and Jericho wouldn't trash them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, obviously, the show wasn't live, but I mean,
they still had final say to edit and all that stuff. So I'm sure there's stuff that was said that we didn't see, obviously. But
I mean, I think ultimately at some point, Jericho will return to WWE.
Yeah.
And I think if Vince truly cares about you, he wants to make that happen, because I think he learned his lesson from Andre the Giant and Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah. You gotta make up before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Because
obviously the thing with Andre the Giant kind of happened really quick, but
well, yeah, and especially with Macho Man, I think that he's definitely learned from that, and he's
but
like,
there's
I don't
something
want that
there
happen.
That's really weird between those two, because it doesn't make any sense as to why Macho Man was never allowed back.
There had to be something. There had to be something there, and that's
I don't buy the whole Stephanie rumor.
I don't either. I've never bought that. I'm sure there was there's some truth to it. I don't know to what extent, but on the whole, I can't believe the whole thing.
No, but hey, you never know. We don't know these people, but I don't buy it.
Yeah. But I think, and that's to close up this segment, I think that puts him on that list with the best Canadian wrestlers of all time. It has to, because he's done it for so long.
He is,
I think. Yeah.
The GOAT of Canada, Chris Jericho.
You hear that, JD? The GOAT of Canada, not your Brett crybaby Hart.
Yes, your new co-host, Brett Hart, sucks.
We'll just have to isolate that and make it be a ringtone or something. Brett Hart sucks. But what doesn't suck is Mr. Rich Palladino. So let's go up to the ring with him.
The following contest is scheduled for 10 minutes and revolves around you. it's listener questions.
It's time for listener question of the week. It comes to us from our good buddy, Coach Rosie. He says, and I quote, "I really hated the angle where they made Chris Jericho an alcoholic. It actually infuriated me. Can you give your thoughts behind the alcoholic angle and what we thought about it in general?" Personally, you know what I've been through. It'll be 5 months tomorrow as this comes out that I've been dry, I've been sober. And I think with the wrestling business, we saw the same thing along the same lines that they did with Scott Hall later on as well. Honestly, I think this was more of an angle. It wasn't anything into it. I think they just wanted to, I think Jerichoholics, they wanted to play on that, and it just came out and materialized, and it just snowballed from there. I don't think there was really any.
That's kind of what I think too. We're talking about the whole thing with CM Punk, right?
Right.
Yeah. I don't think there was that much into it. I didn't like when they did it with Hawk from Legion of Doom.
Right.
I didn't like when they did any of it with Jeff Hardy the few times. I didn't like when WCW did it with Hall. So there's that kind of stuff. I don't think it's funny, or, you know, I'm not like most. I don't really view alcoholism or whatever as like a disease. You know, like I view like people that have cancer and things like that's a real disease. But it is a type of disease that people have. You know, once you get there, there's a really hard time coming back. Alcohol, drugs, things of that nature. So it's kind of more of it's self-inflicted, I would say. But, you know, I don't like it. It's not something that I think should be exploited. I think you should be more worried about helping these guys, especially the wrestling lifestyle, and that so many of them have died at such a young age. You know, those 80s and 90s superstars. And there's a lot of, you know, talk about how these guys partied and drank and lived that hard lifestyle, that I don't think it's something that we need to put on television and show to the world, much less kids.
Yeah. Now, do you think it was something that they wanted to bring up to bring awareness to it? Or do you think it was just basically they wanted to use it as an angle because everybody knew that CM Punk was a straight edge and all that stuff?
I think it's probably just an angle. They're just running something because definitely had to do with CM Punk being straight edge because Jericho poured alcohol all over him, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's just, there's parts of wrestling that I think you can do without. You know, it's kind of like Vince McMahon with when he wrestled Shawn Michaels and God. What's the point of that? That's the dumbest shit ever.
Yeah.
You can leave that kind of stuff out. Vince McMahon, when he walks up to Booker T and says, "What's up, my N-word?"
Yeah.
You know, I know why he did it. The whole thing was making a joke of the whole Hogan thing back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But it was stupid then. It's stupid now. It's being edited off the network, obviously, because Peacock's editing everything, but it wasn't necessary. There's a lot of things that aren't necessary, especially a lot of the storylines from the Attitude Era. Mae Young giving birth to a hand. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's just, it's beyond stupid.
Yeah.
And I mean, sometimes I really sit there and think, like, how the hell has WWE made it or whatever with some of this shit? Like, who in their right mind ever would think the gobbledygooker was a good idea?
There was somebody back
right,
there.
Who in their right mind, like, how, what the fuck is Vince thinking when he decides in the, you know, the mid 90s, everybody's got to be a worker. We got Pig and Hog and Duke the Dumpster Drosy and TL Hopper and the Goon. And what the fuck? What is this?
Everybody need an occupation, pal.
So it's stuff like that's there's a lot of stuff in wrestling that's just silly and makes no sense.
No. And I think it just, like you said, it's just part of that angle that people that they wanted to put out there. But at the same time, I think there was some sort of thought put behind it where they wanted to bring awareness to it and try to help people. But it clearly did not come off as such. But it's just, I'm glad Coach Rosie brought this up, because it's something that they've tried, like we said, numerous times, and it just falls flat because people, they just don't care. They don't want to see it. They think it's garbage. And it is. You're trying to, you know, play on those heartstrings. You play on those emotions. You try to, you get over. It doesn't matter how you get there. To me, anyways.
Yeah. But, no need in having all the silly shit.
Yeah, there's plenty of that for other promotions, but with that being said, one big thanks to Coach Rosie for always supporting the show, supporting it with questions, with feedback, all that good stuff. Active on social media, you too as well can be active with us on social media. If you go over to the Twitter gimmick there, follow us at @ringsiderant. He's at Dave in the QC. You can follow us on Instagram at @ringsiderant as well. You could hit up the merchandise store at ringsiderant.waffleapparel.com. Check out their great merchandise there. I also wanted to take a minute here to express our condolences. For me anyways, Dave, I don't know if you're aware of it, but Josiah lost his father recently.
Yeah.
And I wanted to express our condolences, thoughts and prayers go out to him, his family. I can't imagine what he's going through right now. I know his birthday is either tomorrow, as we're recording on Wednesday, I think it's Thursday or Friday or what have you. I can't imagine what he's going through losing his father, but just want to send out thoughts and prayers and condolences out to him as well and the whole family. But you can also follow, make sure you go over and subscribe to the Ringside Rant, wherever you get your great podcast. Shout out to the boys over at Full Press Coverage, fullpresscoverage.com, for allowing us on that network, as well as the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcasting Network. Big shout out to all those guys over there. They're doing a great job as well. So, Dave, what else you want to promote? I know you guys, this will obviously be your last show. You're heading out to brighter pastures, greener pastures, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Yep. You can still find me on Twitter at Dave in the QC. And I am now podcast tag team partners with Tim and TJ. So look for us at the FF Popcast, at FF Pop, P-O-P cast. That will be our new show. Our first episode will air Tuesday, May 4th. So look for us on all your podcast platforms. We are the Filter Free Popcast, at FF Popcast on Twitter. You'll love it.
Definitely. Well, I'm already subscribed. Looking forward to what you guys got coming. I really do. And you get... three great guys, yourself included, with Timmy. And yes, I'm saying Timmy's a great guy, believe it or not. I know I'm kidding, of course, but Timmy and TJ, three great guys. Definitely check them out. Follow them, subscribe, give them the time, give them the download, give them the listen. And I'm sure they'll definitely be putting out great content. So Dave, I appreciate what you've done here for the last few months that you've been on the show. And, definitely, like I said, looking forward to what you got going on over there as well.
Yep, looking forward to the feedback. So thanks for having me on the rant these last few months, RJ.
Yeah, anytime. It was great getting to ranting with you, so to speak. We'll leave it with that. But,
but I think I went off on some good ones from time to time.
Yeah, it's some of them that were good, bad, and different. But hey, you know, you got your point out there. I absolutely loved it. I'm sure all listeners loved it as well. And like I said, thank you for tuning in this week to the Ringside Rant. And coming up next week, stay tuned to our the Twitter page there at _ringside rant for what we got coming up with new co-host Justin Davis. You can call him JD, just don't call him late for dinner. He is from the hills of West Virginia. Sometimes the service works out there. Sometimes it doesn't. Depends on which way the wind's blowing.
That's the problem. He's from West Virginia. He hasn't learned that Bret Hart sucks yet.
Not yet. I don't think he's seen the Montreal Screwjob yet. I think it's still on coming on Carrier Pigeon or something.
Michael's over Hart anyway. It doesn't matter.
One way or another, my friend, right? Exactly. Yep. But thank you for tuning in this week, and we'll see you next week right here on the Ringside Rant.